And the big reason that I found we were kind of at odds with each other was the way that we both approach a deal and we both approach a negotiation. Think about what a contractor wants to do when they come give you a quote. They want to charge you as much as they can without you going to somebody else and do as little as possible, because the difference is their profit, right? Which is fine. That's how business works. But me as the investor, I want the exact opposite of that. So, you know, we go into this negotiation where no one's going to be happy at the end because we're both looking for the exact opposite. So I started with that like fundamental issue. And over a long period of time, I started to figure out that the only way to remove that negative dynamic there is to remove the motivation, the conflicting motivation, which was the budget of the project.
Welcome to Passive Income Unlocked, where we unlock the doors to intelligent, hands-off real estate investing. We talk to experts in the space about what they do, how they do it, and most importantly, why they do it. My passion is careful, intelligent investing and closing the investing gap one investor at a time. While money doesn't buy happiness, passive income does have the potential to buy back your time. What would you choose to do with your time if you had enough passive income to live your best life? How would you like to spend your days? What kind of impact would you like to make? I'm here to tell you, dream big. There's no ceiling. It's all possible if you take consistent action towards your goals. It's been said that success is 80% mindset and 20% strategy. So we discuss both. Ready to gain knowledge and take action? Let's dive in. Hey, everyone, and welcome back to the show. Today, I'm so excited to introduce our guest for the day, Rich O'Neill. Rich, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Absolutely. Glad to be here.
Absolutely. Well, really excited to get into your story, everyone. Rich has an amazing background. He's from Southeastern Pennsylvania, and he built a $4 million rental portfolio in 4 years by the time he was 27 years old. And he only had $25,000 in cash to start with. He now runs a project management firm, which we'll get into. But let's first talk about, you know, Rich, how you did that. I mean, you started with $25,000. And why did you decide to get into real estate? And, you know, we'll go from there.
Sure. Yeah. So I grew up in construction when I was growing up. My dad had a home building company. So I grew up around that. I was sweeping floors in new construction projects and, you know, all of that stuff. And so I have a pretty extensive background in construction and renovation mostly because I was very hands-on helping. We kind of lived in a live-in flip, so to speak, growing up. So we did a lot of projects on that. And I was very hands-on when I was a little kid, even just learning how all that stuff works. And then in college, one of my favorite classes, one of my favorite concepts, industries was finance. So the perfect marriage of that was real estate. So in college, I was really interested in, I took a bunch of real estate classes. I went to the foreclosure auctions. I went to school in Charleston, South Carolina. So I went to the courthouse there and just sat in the back of the room and tried to figure out how that whole situation worked. I've never bought a property at foreclosure auction, but just wanted to understand it a little bit more. So I was really fascinated by that. And then the combination is what spoke to me. Then moving forward a couple of years later, I've known my wife since I was about 3 years old. We got married and I was actually working for her father-in-law and we were on our honeymoon. And, you know, I was kind of talking about, I got to go back to work on Monday. And I wish we could just keep doing this for a long time. And she said, why don't you just go do the real estate thing? You've been talking about doing that forever. Go for it. I took that maybe a little too literally and went in on Monday and put my 2 weeks in. And my father-in-law is my boss and, you know, he couldn't have been more supportive.
Oh, that's awesome.
I gave him more than 2 weeks, but, you know, gave him notice that, hey, I'm getting ready to go do this. So a couple of weeks before I closed on my first property, I left that job and started investing.
And what was that job? Can you remind me?
I was a sales rep selling a fertilizer product for his company.
Okay.
So yeah, went to do my first project then.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, and I have a question about that. Why do you think you went to be a fertilizer sales rep after having grown up in construction and then also studying real estate? I mean, I have a similar story where I didn't really follow it, you know, but I'm just curious, like what was it that made you decide not to do real estate right out of college?
Well, I mean, I grew up in a pretty conservative household. We were often taught that you want to go to college, go get a good job, make some money. There was definitely some entrepreneurship in there because my dad was a home builder, ran his own company. And, you know, part of his guidance on pushing us to go to college, do all that was the challenges he faced as an entrepreneur. And if you can line up the time frame here, you know, I was in high school right around 2009 to 2010. So I'm sure everybody listening to this podcast remembers what was going on then. So that was a pretty challenging time for the home building industry and part of the push to go find security for us kids. So that was a big part of why I went into, you know, go find a pretty steady job. I actually was interning for my father-in-law, my now father-in-law, over the summer between 2 years in college. And they had a sales rep position open up and they asked me to take that position. And I did, ended up finishing school online while I was working there.
Yeah, for sure. No, I just think that's really fascinating, you know, because, you know, you grew up in this entrepreneurial, well, somewhat entrepreneurial household, but, you know, there are certain fields that were more susceptible to having hard times during the Great Recession. Obviously, home building was one of them, given how, you know, overbuilt we were at the time and all the other factors. So really, really interesting that even with from a home builder, that perspective of like, oh, you should get a steady job and do all this. Anyway, so awesome that you eventually, your wife inspired you to go back into real estate. So tell us about that story, you know, starting from $25,000 and building up to a $4 million rental portfolio.
Yes.
So that's a very impressive accomplishment, by the way.
Yeah, thank you.
To make happen in your 20s. So congratulations.
Yeah. And I think I don't recommend this to everybody because there were some like kind of scary times in there where, you know, I was a very new entrepreneur. I didn't have anything to really fall back on. But I think part of the reason I was able to do that so quickly was because I kind of set myself up that I couldn't fail. If I was going to fail, it was going to be like catastrophic. So I needed to figure it out. And that's kind of like, I feel like I kind of subconsciously do that with a lot of things. So that's really just my personality. I don't recommend that for everybody because, like I said, there were some pretty sketchy times there where I had to like make sure that I could pay the bills. But because I couldn't fail, I figured it out.
When you say you set it up so you couldn't fail, do you mean you just went all in, burnt all your bridges, or,
yep.
or what is that?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And how did you do that? How did you set it up so that you know, you couldn't fail?
Well, I left my job. I didn't really have a fallback. And that's not entirely true. I probably could have gone and found another job if like things got really ugly, but you know, that was like absolute last resort for me. I've known for a very long time that I don't want to work for anybody else. And I even work for my father-in-law, who I love and really respect. And I didn't like that job. So, you know, if I can't enjoy that job, I'm not going to like working for anybody. That's just my personality. So
I can relate.
that was like a non-starter for me to go back to work for somebody else. So I needed to make it work. Now, if it came down to it, I would have done it and sucked it up, but I wouldn't have been happy. So that's what I meant by that. So circling back to the question, how did I actually do it tactically? I did have partners in that deal. So it would be difficult to actually, that's a good headline to say, you know, I only had 25 grand. And I did. I only brought 25 grand to that deal and I brought a bunch of sweat equity and all that. But that wasn't all that was involved there. I did need to bring in partners, but it worked out really well. You know, I'm still partners with them today. And, you know, we've kind of built this portfolio on both of us bringing a little bit of money at the beginning. I was the work behind it. I brought a little bit of money. They brought money and the balance sheet to refinance projects because I didn't have a W-2 anymore. So, you know, now I can't really go qualify for loans. So that was part of our arrangement. And through that partnership, we built, I think that individual portfolio is about 25 units. And then I brought on another partner a little bit later to kind of side by side build another portfolio. So the combination is the numbers we talked about at the beginning.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, I think it takes a lot though to do what you did. Were you listening to, you know, how did you learn what you needed to do in order to like learn what kind of partners you needed and find the deals? Like, were you educating yourself along the way? I mean, I'm sure you were.
Oh, totally. Yeah. And I still do. I mean, that's one of the biggest things that keeps me moving is constantly learning about new things. That's like one of my favorite things to do. Obviously, I'm sure you hear this all the time, but the Bigger Pockets podcast was a big one for me. of course, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, you know, all these books, different sources out there. And I kind of tried, at least initially, to cast kind of a wide net in what I was learning about to try and figure out which segment I wanted to be in. And the good part about that is now that I've kind of focused on single family, small multifamily properties and the BRRRR model, so to speak, now that I've focused on that, I'm able to draw from all sorts of other strategies to help me advance this strategy here.
Yeah, for sure. Totally. Yeah. It makes a lot of sense. I think you got to figure out where you fit in, right? The world of real estate is vast, and understanding kind of the lay of the land and how you want to insert yourself and build your particular business is both something, you got to get started, but you also do want to be aware that there's not just one way to do real estate. So,
and you know, I do try to focus in one realm. I have a broad understanding, but you know, if I tried to get into Airbnb rentals right now or large multifamily outside of, you know, while I was also trying to do small single family, it's just a different niche, so to speak. And I wouldn't be able to focus on either one. And frankly, right now I'm kind of in a little bit of a transition personally. I've slowed down quite a bit on buying small multi single families. And I started a project management business. Market forces drove that. Just some ideas I've had throughout this process have sparked that. So, I'm running this project management business right now, and I'm finding that I've really stepped away from the single family and the real estate purchasing because of that. Now, my project management business has a lot of corollaries to that, but I have to focus on this because as soon as I start doing something else, my current focus is going to start to suffer because of that. You know, especially me, I'm an ADD like case study almost, where I would do 150 other things right now if I could, but I have to be really disciplined in sticking in my lane to make sure I'm as effective as I can be at one thing versus having like either moderate success or even failure in other things.
Yeah, totally. For sure. Yeah. So you're focusing on your project management business and tell us what you do now. I mean, before we talk about what you do now, I do want to go back in time and let's just talk about that first deal because it's so important for people to kind of understand how you actually get started in something like this.
This show is sponsored by Lux Capital Investment Group. Lux Capital provides pre-vetted, highly favorable investment opportunities on a risk-adjusted basis. Our opportunities are diversified across asset classes, geographies, and operators. We are nothing short of rigorous in our approach to evaluating investments. We focus on downside protection, conservative underwriting, recession-resistant asset classes, and forging strong relationships with operating partners and investors. If you want to be an intelligent, hands-off investor and gain access to the types of deals that I like to invest in personally, make sure to go to lux-cap.com, LUXE-CAP.com, and sign up for our newsletter.
Yeah, so that first deal was really an odd one. It took me a long time to find. And it came down to really just putting offers in on a lot of different places. And they were all really low. And it was just seeing what stuck. My real estate agent at the time probably hated it. He's a good friend today, but he hated it. So that one, it was listed for $50,000. It was a 3-bed, 1-bath row home. Listed for $50,000. They had done like a partial renovation. There was still a lot of work left to do, but it had clearly sat for a long time. So listed for $50,000. I put an offer in at $25,000 just to like thinking it was never going to get accepted. A couple weeks go by and we didn't hear anything. I'm thinking it was gone. And I finally get a call from my agent. He says, "You're not going to believe this, but they called back and said that it was accepted at $25,000. And I said, "What are you, how, why?" And he said, "So what we didn't know is that this property is part of a bankruptcy sale. And I haven't done this again. Like I haven't found this again, but it was a bankruptcy sale. So the seller had no ties to it. They were, at this point, they didn't care what they got. And the court had an obligation to get as much money as they could to pay back creditors. So the court kind of made the decision as to whether or not we were going to get this property or this offer accepted. Apparently, we were the only offer. So the fact that we were the only offer and there was something legitimate on the table, they were able to take it for 20 grand. So just goes to show you that make the offer and worst they can say is no. And we got a lot of no's, but that one ended up being a yes. So we bought this thing for 25 grand.
And did you, how did you pick that number when you were deciding what to put down, what to offer?
It was a while ago, so I don't remember exactly, but some combination of, and I knew what my strategy was going to be. So I figured that the property was going to be worth probably about 65 to 70 grand when it was renovated. And it was probably going to take me about 20 grand to get there. And I wanted to be able to pull all of my money out. So however those numbers worked out, I can't do the math in my head right now, but however those numbers worked out, that's kind of where I got my offer.
Yeah.
That's where it made sense. You know, again, it was listed at 50 grand. It was maybe worth 75 when it was finished. So I threw an offer I thought made sense. So we sold it for, or we bought it for 25. I went in and did most of the work myself. You know, I replaced all the outlets. I did a bunch of drywall work, got a new bathroom, new countertops, some other fixes that just needed to be done. It wasn't the nicest renovation you've ever seen, but it was solid and it was pretty durable for the most part. One mistake I made was that I put carpet in it. That was not a good idea. It was cheap and we did it. So then we got it appraised, refinanced it, and we were able to pull all of our money back out and took that money and bought another one.
Awesome. Yeah, totally. And just for listeners who aren't familiar with BRRRR, can you just explain what that is?
Buy, renovate, rent, refinance, repeat. So overall concept is if you can refinance your property at 75% LTV, so you can do a cash out, you can take your cash out of the property at 75% of the value of the property. You just need your purchase, repair, and whatever other costs that go into the property to be under 75% of what you think it's going to be worth at the back end. And if you can do that, then you can take all of your money out and take, so you can start with, say, $60,000, buy a property, renovate it, put a tenant in it, refinance the property, end up now with a new property and $60,000. Now you can go buy another property and do the exact same thing over and over again without technically any new cash coming into the deal. Yeah. So that's the basic concept. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a really powerful way for a new investor to take like their kind of precious capital and use it over and over again. Do you have any recommendations for, you know, what was the debt service coverage ratio or do you remember like when you were doing the BRRRR strategy, what kind of, because obviously you're pulling out your cash, but you have a larger loan, right? So then what is the rental coverage are you looking for?
I mean, the bank usually requires, at least my banks usually require like 1.2 to 1.25 debt service coverage ratio, which basic terms is saying that your rental income needs to be at least 1.25% or 1.25 times the amount of the debt service, meaning the difference there is going to cover any of your other expenses plus profit. That's what the bank's looking for. Generally, when I run my numbers, I just take all of the detail and try to get to at least $200 a door. That's kind of my number. So those are my main criteria. Other than geography, my main criteria are $200 a door in cash flow and then being able to pull all of my money out on a refinance.
Yeah. Awesome. Cool. Well, I just think those are some important things for people to think through, you know, because 75% loan to value is one thing, but then also making sure you have that debt service coverage ratio or $200 a door, whatever it is that you're looking for. Awesome. Why don't you give us an idea of what you're working on? Thank you so much for going over your first deal. And, you know, it's always just important for people to hear those stories and say like, okay, I can do it too. Right. So hopefully you can hear Rich's story and, you know, he got a lot of no's before he got that yes too, but you got to start somewhere. So what are you working on now? Tell us about your project management company.
I mean, a big part of my building that portfolio was managing renovation projects. And there was always this issue that I had, this fundamental issue that I had with the relationship with all of my contractors. And I went through a lot of them building this portfolio. And the big reason that I found we were kind of at odds with each other was the way that we both approach a deal and we both approach a negotiation. Think about what a contractor wants to do when they come give you a quote. They want to charge you as much as they can without you going to somebody else and do as little as possible because the difference is their profit, right? Which is fine. That's how business works. But me as the investor, I want the exact opposite of that. So you know, we go into this negotiation where no one's going to be happy at the end because we're both looking for the exact opposite. So I started with that like fundamental issue. And over a long period of time, I started to figure out that the only way to remove that negative dynamic there is to remove the motivation, the conflicting motivation, which was the budget of the project. So we started this project management company with a pricing model that was completely different than most general contractors. We tried to tie our fee to the schedule. That is something that we can both shoot for because contractor obviously wants to get in, get out, make their money and move on. Investor wants the same thing because they want to get their money moving as quickly as they can into the next project. So that was something, and we've found a lot of success out of just that pricing model where we now have the same goal moving forward, and that's to get your project done as quickly as possible. So that's just one of the things that we did to kind of try and fix that relationship. That was kind of the primary start.
Okay. Wait, just so I can understand that a little bit more. So you were having them get paid more for finishing earlier, or can you explain a little bit more about what you were, why that changed that dynamic?
We're passing through direct costs on projects. So we're a project manager. We're doing all of the things that an investor should be doing. Setting a budget, building a schedule, making sure we stick to those two things on a regular basis, making sure the plumber shows up on time, keeping that communication going. We do job logs, we call them, which is showing up on site, making sure stuff's getting done. We do all of those things that the owner should be doing, but maybe doesn't have the time to do, maybe they're located out of state, maybe they just don't have the knowledge to know what to look for, or they don't know how to build a schedule, or they don't know some of these things. That's totally cool. That's why we're here. So we're as much a consultant as we are a contractor. The pricing model was just one way that we kind of aligned ourselves with our clients.
Okay. So like, for example, you pass through like the cost of the subs, but then the general contractor is going to get a fee and they only get that fee if its project is finished on time. Is that right? Or they get it?
So our fee is fixed based on, we have a weekly fee that we use to set our overall fee. So at the beginning of the project, we'll set your schedule for you and say, we think this project is going to take X amount of weeks. We just take X times our weekly fee, and that's our fee that we lock in at the beginning. So now if we go finish the project early, we get the same amount of fee. You're not paying us more for that, but we make a higher margin because our resources are only deployed for less amount of time. If we go over that, then our margin starts to go down because now we've got more time on the project and more resources spent. So that's how we try to align ourselves with client, because now if it gets done early, great. You get the project on the market sooner. Everybody wins. It goes a little bit longer, then you're not paying any more for it. Now we have to eat some extra cost.
Got it. Okay. Very cool. Well, I think that's a really great problem that you are solving with that one strategy, at least. Very cool. So what is it that you think owners, you know, these are people who are buying like small multifamily and single family houses, and you're essentially managing the renovations for them, right? Are you doing the property management later or just the renovations?
We're not, but we can recommend you to some property managers that we've used. Yeah.
Well, that sounds like a wonderful service. And it's basically, what would you say the main value is that you're providing to owners?
Well, so we have three brand promises we like to talk about: on time, on budget, hands off. So the most important being the hands off piece. The goal is that with some prep and some planning at the very beginning, you can now basically set it and forget it. We have a project management portal that all of our clients get access to. So they can log in at any point and see where we are with the budget, where we are with the schedule. They can check the most recent job logs, any messaging, communication, it all happens right in there. So the goal is that you never feel like you have to show up to the project in order to get something done. You can see it all just progressing nicely right there. And you never feel like you have to do anything. And we have some repeat clients. Usually our first-time clients are checking in a little bit more, trying to make sure it's all going smoothly. And that's great. We invite you to do that. But we have some repeat clients that are basically like, okay, do it the same as last time. And then we don't hear from them until the end of the project, which is really the goal that we're trying to get to. So that ultimately you can take that extra time that you would be sitting there waiting for appliances to show up or waiting for an inspector that gives you a 4-hour window, rather than sitting there and doing all of the other tasks that are associated with managing that project, you can be out there networking with high net worth individuals, raising money. You can be finding deals. You can be at networking events. You can be spending time with your family, whatever the most payoff for your time is going to deliver, you can be doing those activities.
For sure. Yeah. Awesome. Well, sounds like a great service. And do you operate just in Southeastern Pennsylvania, or where do you operate?
Yeah. So at this point, just in Southeastern PA, Philadelphia, Delaware, Montgomery, Chester counties. Looking to expand that in the next couple of years, but stay tuned on our website and everything to see where that's going.
Yeah, totally. Well, thanks so much for sharing, Rich, about your journey and just, you know, how you built your portfolio, how you got started, and then now what you're doing now, because it's an awesome service. So please share with the listeners how they can get a hold of you or learn more about you or anything else you want to share.
Yeah. So you can follow me. I'm on Instagram. My personal handle is Rich A. O'Neill. Philly Investor Contractor is the company's Instagram. Facebook, I'm on Bigger Pockets as well. So those are kind of my most common places, but I'll make sure that you have all that to put in the show notes.
Okay, perfect. Awesome. Well, thanks so much, Rich, for coming on the show. I hope you all take some time to check him out, and we will see you next time.
Awesome. Thanks.
Thank you so much for listening to Passive Income Unlocked. Before you go on to continue with your amazing day, please take a moment to reflect on what you truly desire in life. Then think about one thing you can do to push the ball forward in that direction. Also, please head over to iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts and leave an honest rating and review of this show. It really would mean so much to me. Passive Income Unlocked is brought to you by Lux Capital. Lux works with investors nationwide to invest in real estate. We are closing the investing gap one investor at a time. Connect online at www.lux-cap.com, LUXE-CAP.com, for tons of free educational content to further your success.